Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are wolfing down the points in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Yes, that's right. Last Saturday's comprehensive victory at Wolves saw us notch our record Premier League points tally and secure yet another win on the road. Our away form is so good, in fact, that it places us in the Champions League places behind Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea. Our hope is to add to those 44 points, but two of our three remaining games are at the Amex and our form there has been awful. So let's hope that we can rediscover that winning feeling in front of our own fans as we welcome the beleaguered Manchester United today. Also this week, the Albion have the chance to pick up some silverware in the Sussex Senior Cup Final. It's Premier League champions Worthing are the opponents at the Amex on Tuesday, with the game kicking off at 7:15. Joining me to discuss all that and more is, of course, Alan Wares. And we welcome back Justin Brentnell. And we have a Raw Virgin for you in the shape of Andy Message. Andy, welcome to the Raw. Long-time fan, I understand, and it's great to have you finally with us. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your Albion supporting history?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, guys, for inviting me on. Really appreciate it. Thank you. So first game that I remember is 1989. Sunderland, we won 3-1 at the Goldstone. My cousin started taking me, I think, around about the time my dad got ill. There's something to go out and do with me. So I've got lots of Albion memorabilia from early in that, which were my dad's, and old football shirts. But I don't think my dad took me to a game back in sort of like the late 70s and early 80s. It wasn't maybe the sort of place you take a young kid, maybe. But no, yeah, 3-1 Sunderland. I moved, not ever been a fair weather fan. I've always been consistently inconsistent with how much I go with work and all the rest of it. But I moved to Suffolk 20 years ago and I now live in Sudbury, if all of you remember where that is.
Yes.
Kind of ironic, really. I always thought that Sudbury game was probably our lowest point. After that, we started turning things around. So, and I now live literally a stone's throw from the ground where the Albion played, and go and see Sudbury as well. They're a nice, it's a nice setup.
They had a decent cup run this year as well, didn't they? I mean, they got to play Colchester, which is a massive derby.
Yeah, it was really good, and that was literally behind my house where that stadium is, and the local community were really enjoyed it. We got involved with decorating lampposts and all the rest of it. Like, it was really great. First round of the FA Cup. Unfortunately, the football was shocking on the night. And they got turned over and I took my sulky 9-year-old home for 80 minutes when they were 4-0 down, I think. But I've always told the kids I don't really mind what they do in life as long as they can be Albion fans. My daughter was actually born sort of near Ipswich. And the first game I took her to was that Ipswich game at the Amex with that
ridiculous banner.
Yeah. And I said to her afterwards, I said, Mary, look, you know, you are from Suffolk, you could support Ipswich, it could be your team. She just said, I hate Ipswich, and she can do no wrong in my eyes now. But no, you know, I've installed it in all the kids, and we come down at season ticket at the moment, and we all come down for games quite regularly.
So when you first got taken to the Gold, something, say in 89, did you have a hankering to go before that, or were you kind of had your sorry ass dragged along there, or you know, what was your sort of knowledge of the Albion, albeit in absentia?
Yeah, well, I was at Boundstone College, if anyone remembers that. And we didn't have a lot of Albion fans in the area. There wasn't a lot of my friends went to games or anything like that. It was my cousin who really kind of took me along. And he would take me whenever he wasn't working. So we'd go to some really random away games like Preston and Swansea and whenever he wasn't working. But it wasn't really something that, you know, until he took me along, it was something I was kind of clamouring to do. It wasn't really on the radar. But as I said, my dad was a fan, and I've got all of his old programmes and stuff. And I know they bought me a British Caledonian shirt. From back in an original one, and I found it when I was about 17, and I put it on, and my mum had made me number 8 and stitched it on the back, and I put it on, and I was in the house on my own,
and I couldn't get it off. And I was starting to feel like I was gonna, you know, I was gonna pass out. So I had to rip it. It was probably the first moment.
Oh man!
My original, my Peter Ward number eight on the back of it.
Oh no!
So when you first went, you know, and you say, let's say you played Sunderland. I mean, was it a case of, you know, oh, I'll go again soon, or did you sort of have a bug that was bitten? Did you sort of like have that, oh wow, this is, you know, you sort of going over the top and onto the terraces? Or was it sort of, I'll go when I'm ready?
Yeah, it was like, who do I go with? You know, you sort of like, you need when you go to the football, you want to go and see people you know. You want to go with friends. You're not just, it's not just a game of football, is it? It's a social event, and you're, you know, do you mean, and that's something I think we all miss through lockdown and stuff. And when you're standing there at the Amex, you hear people chatting about all sorts of stuff. You don't talk always about the football. So until I kind of made other friends who were more into the Albion, I didn't go unless I went with Albert.
Yeah. So I remember that game in 89. I remember Sunderland brought down a massive amount of people. But what can you remember much about the game? Can you remember the pick of the players for you?
No, I can't remember who scored. I think we went 1-0 down, and I think we ended up winning 3-1. I remember Sunderland. It was the days before that part of the East Terrace was closed off, because I think they I don't know, there was more of the East Terrace open than there was by the end of it at that time.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I can't remember too much about, I'm sure someone will tell us eventually who that day. But,
well, 89 would have been, I guess, was Gary Nelson was there, right, and Kevin Bremner.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a game here. I'm just looking at, while you were saying all this, I've just looked in Tim Carter's book, which is now nearly 30 years old. Tim, upgrade, please. I've got a game here, home to Sunderland in the 88-89 season. But that would have been the 26th of November, 1988.
Maybe it was 88.
Yeah, we won 3-0.
Yeah.
And goal scorers were Gary Chivers, Steve Penny and Kevin Bremner.
Well, I'm glad the book's there, because that's better than my memory.
Of course it was Steve Penny. Of course it was. Anyway, Justin, welcome back. Good to see you as ever. I don't think we've... Have you got any Goldstone memories?
Yeah, I went a few times, so, but a bit later than Andy, in sort of the early 90s. I went to, it's probably maybe the season after, it's difficult to remember, the playoff game, but I remember seeing us absolutely taken apart by Kenny Dalglish's Blackburn Rovers and David Speedy, I think, just being on sort of top form. That wasn't great. And then there was a South End game I went to, I think, and I think we won that as well. I wasn't a regular at the Goldstone by any means. I was sort of going with my pal from school when I could. But
okay. Well, we're going to come on to a few of your goals and memories a little bit later on. We've had some really good ones, actually, from last week. But let's go on to the game last Saturday. And it was a bit of a demolition job at Wolves. It was arguably, possibly, performance-wise, it was probably one of our best performances of the season. Obviously, Wolves did come onto the pitch wearing flip-flops by the looks of it, but
Well, the thing is, Wolves have still got something to go for, so, you know, that attitude really does suck. But when you saw the performance and you saw it in the context of the whole game, yeah, we took Wolves apart, and we're back to the age-old thing of, were Wolves poor or were we great? And every
did we make play... or were they okay and we made them look bad? It's another
That's the issue, isn't it? When we played Spurs, when we played Arsenal, oh, they weren't at their best, and you know, Brighton just, you know, they stopped them playing. And now, hang on a minute, that was a demolition, and 3-0, I think, flattered Wolves. They were taken apart. They didn't have a plan B. They looked listless. But for a team that's still got something to go for, you know, I'd have been furious with that performance. The closest you can put to it would probably be the Villa game at home. Not necessarily the Burnley game, because Burnley were very good. But the Villa game, where Villa weren't that good. And you're angry with it because you're playing against, you know, a not particularly great side. I mean, we played okay against Burnley, but were just done for. We played poorly against Villa and again got done for. So, no, I thought it was a demolition on our part.
Yeah, sorry, Andy, go on.
I thought kind of the Wolves game sort of summed up our season, really. I don't remember the home game. I don't think we...
Yeah, we lost 1-0.
Yeah, I don't think we... That was a typical performance at one end of the spectrum for us this season. And then the one at the other end, we beat them 3-0 away from home and turned them over. So it sort of summed up the whole season for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was 17 shots on target during the game, 9 on target, which I think... It's not the most shots we've had in the game, but the most we've had on target, which that tells a story in itself, Justin.
Yeah, I think it does. I think you've got to bear in mind, though, that it was an away game for us. And as you said in the introduction, that is kind of when we're playing away, it is our sort of A team rather than our H team, which stands for horrific at home. Because we're actually we're qualifying for the championship in our home form.
We're 18th in the table on home form alone.
I think
fourth on away form. That's ridiculous.
For me, I think Wolves are a team that they don't concede many goals at all, and they don't score many goals. But they've got a lot of good value this season out of nicking a goal in a game, making it very tight, like they did at the Amex. I think. They like to control possession potentially, and when they couldn't do that, I think they're all at sea. The thing I noticed though was that midfield of Mwepu, Bissouma, and Caicedo. How you keep the ball away from those three, or you don't get tackled by them, is a tough task for any of our opponents.
Yeah, Al, I know you wanted to come in here, but Justin, that was. Possibly, do you think that is the last time we're going to see those three start together? And Wepu's are probably going to be out for the rest of the season now. Will we ever see those three on the same pitch together at the same time, wearing the same shirt?
I'd be surprised. I don't want to get into the transfer window stuff because it's not going to float Al's boat. But I'm
the only other listener we've got, mate. So if you've got something to say for it, go for it.
Wepu's injured, and I think Bissouma, if I was his agent, I'd be saying to him, listen, buddy, I can get you a top six team and I can get you 200k a week. So don't sign anything with the Albion because you're that good. So, yes, you're right, AD.
Andy, what do you think?
I think since they've got together as a group, they've been fantastic. They've been absolutely brilliant and boss in the midfield. But I can't see. Mwepu seems to pick up a reasonable amount of injuries, or has done so far, and hopefully we can kind of get him over that. We don't need another injured midfielder, a good midfielder. We've already got one of those in the squad. But I don't think Bissouma will be here in the start of next season. So probably the last time.
It's interesting what you say about Mwepu and the injuries. Al, do you think that part of that will be him settling into the hustle and bustle of the Premier League and the increasing in intensity, or is he injury prone?
Well, I think, they're not mutually exclusive, those notions.
No.
So we don't know. He seems to get his injuries by overstretching or doing something that seems a little bit alien to him. So we'd like to think that it's actually, you know, the notion and the extra work that one needs to put in. But then don't forget, this is a fellow who's played Champions League before. So, you know, he knows what it takes to get up to speed in a given sort of circumstance. The question I wanted to ask, actually, and I think that, you know, it might have been partially answered. And by the way, thanks for asking me as to whether I think I'll see those three again. And I think the answer is yes, on account of the fact that I'm not so sure that actually... The Bissouma is still possibly considered a little bit toxic by other clubs. And that's not necessarily a thing that, you know, we should dismiss so easily. But the question I specifically wanted to ask Andy was, you know, given the results against Arsenal and against Spurs and obviously the great thing against Wolves, are we playing better, or is there, you know, or are we playing as well as we have done, but just picking up the results and not giving away the silly goals. Where do you think that are we improving? Because like, obviously we're finishing the season with a little bit of a flurry, a little bit of a flourish. You know, considering what had gone before. So where do you think? What do you think is actually happening out there?
I personally think Potter's great when he's got a little bit of time with the players and he can kind of reinvent how they do things and has more time to work with them. And I think the upturn in results, I think, kind of coincided. There was a couple of weeks break.
Mm-hmm.
For me, he's obviously a great coach and really can get the best out of players. So I think given a bit of time, and I think this is why he'll probably get better year on year and the team will eventually get better year on year, given the time to prepare and to get those players drilled into the system that you want. I think that's the difference.
But it's also coincided with this great run of form we're on at the moment. It's also coincided with the inclusion of Moises Caicedo in the team.
Yeah, but that hasn't necessarily... I mean, all right, he's given a great assist to Mwepu for his goal. But, you know, we've had some great midfielders playing for this season, and you pick a midfielder, no one would have any trouble with them saying, if you're talking about Modo, if you're talking about Ozati, if you're talking about Lallana, players who are now back further back down the pecking order, who have not been doing the things of getting the chances on target, but then nor has Caicedo, and Mwepo has been skying them, and so on and so forth. So I think the question I wanted to sort of, you know, this is where more I wanted to get from Andy and from Justin is it down to that midfield trio, or is it down to the fact that we've actually bothered our asses to learn to shoot?
I would say something, that's two options. The third option for me is bedding in Veltman, Dunk and Cucurella as that back three. And we'd kind of lost Byrne and Webster had been injured. And that coincided, I think, with that awful patch we had. But now those three, you're kind of thinking, right, you've got to play those back three from the off. So that's kind of your base. In terms of the shooting, it's so inconsistent and generally awful. I don't know.
I mean, Justin, go back to your original point there, though. So, I mean, obviously, the starting lineup at Wolves, Webster was relegated back to the bench again. So, do you think that was part of the thinking?
The thing with Webster is that if he's coming back from an injury, his first game, he's terrible. And he was duly substituted against Southampton after kind of passing.
That was pre-planned, though, I think.
I'm not sure. What I like about that back three is it's set up in a clever way. And Ben White was doing this last season. And what you're finding is it's very difficult to defend against that system when you've got that midfield three powerhouse. And then you've kind of got Cucurella, who's meant to be on the left side of the back three, but actually he goes into winger mode a lot of the time, and it's kind of it's confusing for the opposition. It's difficult, and Cucurella is wow, what a player, and he's able to sit back in that back three, and he's able to be there when he's needed to be there and defend properly, and then bang, he's on the wing.
And Andy.
So, I mean, what we lost for a while was Byrne and Webster loved to bring the ball out, and they made those great runs, didn't they? And it's not something Dunk can do, and it's not something Veltman can do. But Cucurella's kind of taken on some of that, hasn't he? So it gives you another added dimension when you're being marked all over the pitch to be able someone to bring the ball out and exploit that gap. So maybe Cucurella's kind of come into that role a little bit more. He's much more comfortable going forward.
But do you think that's something that Dunk does do, Al?
But you do also think that it's also down to a better understanding with Trossard, because Cucurella and Trossard together, you know, I mean, given Justin's point there, which I think is actually very, very sound, we got a centre half effectively, one of the centre backs who's going bombing on like a winger, and the opposition are going, well, hang on, who's picking him up? And then you've got Trossard, who, when he stays on his feet, can be devastating on his day. You know, do you think that, again, we've picked up on maybe accidentally, maybe deliberately, or maybe it's just one of those things that we're trying out, this you know, really good partnership of Trossard and Cucurella?
Well, that's what I think, is that, come back to that point of Potter, give him time and give him a couple of weeks to try things out in training and stuff, and he'll try different methods and different ideas. And, well, actually, let's stick Cucurella in the at the left of a back three and let's see what he can do. And it's worked. It has worked.
This is mostly on the road, and it's like the issue we've got is this home form, and it's the elephant in the room, isn't it? And it's like 18th, we're 18th in the form table for games at home, and fourth in the table for games away. And why is that? I mean, why?
Well, there is one overriding thing going on here. And you have to bear in mind, and you've said to yourself, it's because we're at home. Now, most teams, and I probably exclude Manchester City. Actually, I'd possibly even include Liverpool if we're going to sort of really good at this. But certainly, I'd exclude Manchester City. A lot of teams, they don't exactly park the bus, but they defend very deep against us to nullify this kind of bizarre spider's web method of our play. The sort of thing that they don't do at home. It is expected that you're supposed to come out at home and be the team that takes it to the opposition. And we've always struggled, and I think this is probably going to be the next lesson, the next step up in Potter's evolution, is how to break down a team that's actually going to defend quite deep. Because I think, Justin, Andy, I don't know what you think about this, I think we still struggle with that, whether it's home or away, but certainly at home, and it shows, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100% for me. And I think that is a criticism you can level at Potter for his whole tenure. He's not able to overcome those kind of deep lying defensive things. The thing I'd say for Potter is that we tend to, and I'm thinking back to the Leeds game earlier this season and there's other games as well, lots of examples where we do create half a dozen decent goal scoring chances and the players just aren't taking them, which is incredibly frustrating. And that seems to kind of almost be a group think sort of confidence thing at home where our players just, there's pressure on the shot. I don't know what it is, but you know, hands up who thought Mope would score that penalty against Norwich when he I knew he was going to miss.
I think that with any penalty we get.
Yeah. Well, that's a really nice segue there, because that moves us nicely on to the first penalty against Wolves, which, I think the only person that was claiming it was Solly, and it turns out he was absolutely right. And it was actually quite blatant when you look at it. I mean, obviously, we see multiple angles.
There were three or four players claiming it, actually. But yes, yeah. It was a good shout. And
I mean, I was saying that when you see how actually blatant it was, you're wondering why it wasn't actually given in real time, actually. But
well, I don't know about where the linesman was, whether he was on that side or the other side. But I mean, I could understand the referee because he would have been on the blind side to it. So, you know, the referee isn't an all-seeing God. He's not an all-seeing eye. So, and he will miss stuff. Andy, when you saw McAllister, it was his turn to put himself in the firing line. Confident or here we go again?
Well, I was at a friend's birthday barbecue watching my kids jump around on a bouncy castle. So not to be rude by looking at my phone on a stream I could find. So I was following it online. And I was like, we've missed a penalty. So there's no surprise there. We've got another penalty. And the same guy's taking it. I thought, do you know what? Well, well done to him. I didn't see there was some shenanigans, wasn't there, about who was taking it. But I thought, do you know, I like McAllister. And I think he's the sort of player that helps us move the ball a bit quicker and break down those teams that set up against us really deeply. But I'm really pleased he scored it. I really am chuffed for him. And hopefully that'll take him a bit further forward.
Yeah, Justin, depending on your viewpoint of whether your glass is half full or half empty, we've either missed or scored 50% of our penalties this season. That's not a great record.
No. And I was in a similar situation to Andy actually at the weekend, but I did watch sort of the extended highlights and stuff, and something the interesting thing about the second penalty was. It was exactly the same, but maybe 2 inches inside the post. To do that, I mean, it's extraordinary. When McAllister stepped up, he was obviously thinking to himself that the keeper's going to think, I've got to get it's going to be a different penalty. But the keeper didn't. The keeper thought, you're going to do the same penalty. And he did. And to execute that, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the only Argentinian number 10 who's not that great at penalties, to be fair.
I'm trying to think of the last time. I mean, obviously getting two penalties in one match is relatively rare. But I'm trying to think of the last time we scored two penalties. I'm not going to waste up any airtime trying to think about it. But, I mean, I do recall a couple of games in the latter days of with Dean where we got two penalties in the game. The first one was scored. And even then, back then, it was a malaise. Don't forget how many Murray missed. Don't forget how many Chris Wood missed. Don't forget how many Matt Sparrow missed. We won that division at canter, and we still missed a lot of penalties.
I think Glenn has scored two in a game. I think he actually has. But Andy, you wanted to.
I just wondered if there's no pressure on it, and if we were taking a spot kick against a Premier League goalkeeper, do you think we'd score more than our players are at the moment? If it's just a bit of a laugh, kick about in the park, is it just the pressure that we can't score? Is it what is it? They can clearly hit the target from that far out.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it's just knowing how to take a penalty. They're professional footballers, you know, and it's the malaise that we have of trying to convert and easy chances, and a penalty is about as an easy chance as you're going to get. But having said that, even then, we've missed easier. But then having said that, I wouldn't mind betting. If you looked at everyone else's record, it's probably, we probably are sort of near the bottom of the pile, but not sort of cast adrift in terms of the stats, you know.
I'll dig up that stat at some point. I mean, Man City missed a lot of penalties as well, actually, to be fair.
Well, there you go. I mean, have we seen Sanchez save one yet?
No, I don't think we have.
No, because it was Stockdale that was the penalty hero. I mean, let's reminisce for a couple of minutes here. That 2016-17 season, and there were many, many heroes in that. But Andy, I mean, take us back. Stockdale saves, you know, they kept us ahead of the game, didn't they?
That double save against Sheffield Wednesday, I thought that's the moment we're going up. I thought we're going to do this now. We're going to do this. The team, I just love that team. They were so, I don't know, there was such a great spirit about them. You could see how much it meant to all of them. And that's the moment. I absolutely love that. It's one of my favourite moments of that season.
The fact it was Sheffield Wednesday as well. You just, you know, not only do you want to celebrate the win, you just want to stick two fingers up all the time, don't you?
It was good and I liked it. But I'll take your Stockdale save and I raise you Matty Ryan at Stoke.
No, I'm still going to tell you. I think Andy's right. I'm still going to, because it was the way he got up for the rebound, I initially thought that Forestieri had scuffed it. It wasn't until afterwards I realised it was a double save. It was that good. Mm. And then Shane Duffy, so he performs like a hero, and then Shane Duffy chest butts him back into the middle of next week, you know. It was that good. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, having weathered a storm, Knockhart goes down the other end and gets the winner. I bet Sheffield Wednesday were sick of the sight of him by the end of that game.
I'm just trying to think of going through my mind, which is not
which
the
is
greatest
at the best of times. Yeah.
Throughout Albion's history, who has been our best goalkeeper at saving penalties?
I don't know what the stats would say, but
or Twitter or Facebook.
I don't know what the stats would say, but for times that they were important, and let's face it, each one of those that Stockdale saved, the major three, the one at Fulham, the one at Brentford and the one at home to Sheffield Wednesday, it's not as though we were 5-0 up and it was going to be their consolation. It kept us, they'd have gone three, Brentford would have gone 3-0 up. Fulham would have gone, actually, they'd have gone 1-0 up, but they were battering us that day. So each one was a necessary save, Justin. And, you know, and each one was there to be celebrated, wasn't it?
Definitely. And that was when sort of, yeah, I thought Stockdale was a Premier League keeper at that point, and it was such a shame. It would have been great for him to have been able to put Matt Ryan under some very heavy pressure, and I don't really think Matt Ryan had that competition that he needed. No, just a competition that David Stockdale would have provided him, and I think it was, unfortunately, David Stockdale took horrific advice from whoever it was. He said, you know what, you know, we offered him a Premier League contract and he turned it down. And that's really sad. because he was brilliant for us.
I think he spoke about it, and he was offered a longer term deal by Birmingham, wasn't he? And at the last, he was probably the last contract he was going to sign. But he's still turning out, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's a Wickham.
Who was the Birmingham manager at the time?
Was it Steve Harry Bruce? Redknapp.
No,
Harry Redknapp.
It was Harry Redknapp.
Right, so we promised and, him all and, the
and subsequently, and... Birmingham went into liquidation, like. For spending too much money on transfers and wages, no coincidence at all, obviously. But okay, well let's go back to this then. And obviously, McAllister did have that second opportunity, and it was a ball pumped into the channel by Lewis Dunk, which Danny Welbeck was chasing down, and he got felled in the box. Now, there was a similar situation to the second goal the second goal, actually, where the run by Danny Welbeck was just absolutely lung busting, and it was obviously we know McAllister scored and it was given by well, but let's talk about the importance of Danny Welbeck here, because I mean, this run that we've been on, he's been instrumental in pretty much all of the goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. If only we all know this. If he could stay fit, he wouldn't be with us. He would be another team. But he can stretch to play a lot better, can't he? Than maybe the Mope can. He comes a bit shorter, so it gives us another dimension. When you've got those teams who are kind of tightly packed in against us and we can't break them down, it gives us another way of getting around it.
Yeah, Justin.
Yeah, that Southampton goal. I'm still thinking about that and. The initial pass and sort of control, it just set the whole goal. It was such a perfect pass that he pulled out. And then he's there in the penalty area with essentially a metaphorical gun to the defender's head, saying to him, if you don't stick this in the goal, I will. And the Southampton player duly obliged and did it. But he's, it is a thing with him. If he didn't have the injury issues, he would have never dropped below a top six side, and he'd probably still be in the England squad. It's like snakes and ladders with him, unfortunately. But the quality is top six, and he's still got pace and speed as well. I think some people forget that they tend to look at his age and injury record, and assume that he's not fast. Well, he is, and we've seen that over the last few games.
But given his historical sick notary and his age, as you mentioned...
He's not that old.
Well, he's 32, I think, now.
He's only just turned 30, isn't he?
Well, the thing is, that's a kind of usually a magic threshold, especially for strikers. I mean, defenders can probably go on a bit longer, but strikers are a bit of a rarer breed. And the point I was going to make was that who... Given our position as a mid-table Premier League side, who above us would actually take him on now? Not that they'd take a risk. I mean, if he was available and free, then yeah, he's worth a punt, I think, especially if he can stay injury-free. But if he's going to be with us, you know, this is where we're trying to get into the mind of a footballer or a given individual. Does he stay with us for another year or so, knowing full well that, you know, what he has and what he knows he'll have another one of? Or does he risk looking for someone like Wolves or West Ham or Leicester, who are above us in that sort of pedigree? Maybe not tip top six. I can't see any of them going for him. Or maybe even looking abroad. But I mean, we're talking about a whole maelstrom here, but he's not alone in thinking, is he going to stay here for another year or two? Is the club going to do that? Well, would we want to? Whether the fans want to or not is another matter, but would we want to? So I'll run that round you. Do you think, not whether you want to, do you think the club should give him another year or two?
Yes. Yeah, no, they should. They should offer him another year. I think if I was Danny Welbeck in his position, and if another club comes in that offers him the same amount of money and it's a two-year deal, I don't know, maybe be tempted by that. But I think for us, definitely a year. What we've got to recognise, if we took him for 2 years, you've got to realise it's only one season you'll probably get out of him. And if he's very injury prone. So I'd definitely offer him another year.
Would you say the same about Adam Lallana?
He's still got a year.
Has he?
Yeah. But you offer a year with the option of another, which you can both...
Yeah, Justin, would you want to see Danny Welbeck back here next season?
Yeah, I do, and for a couple of reasons. We know the injury thing, but generally when he plays, he is a level above. The second thing is to do with role modelling and the fact that from everything I can gather, he is a very good professional. He is a very nice bloke. He's the sort of person you need in the club and in the dressing room and the younger players. And by the way, we've got a lot of those in the squad, and we're probably going to have another batch in next season. He's the sort of ex-international Arsenal, Man United player they can all look to and they can aspire to. And I think he's done a fantastic kind of job behind the scenes, showing to those younger players, this is, you know, I've got injuries, but this is what you have to be a model pro. And I think he is a model pro. You only read good stuff about Danny Welbeck. There might be other strikers who are contracted to the club where they don't get those sorts of headlines. But with Welbeck, what a role model. He only needs to play 15, 20 games a season, and I'm happy for that. I know he won't play anymore anyway. And we can see now that if he stays fit for and plays in these next three games, we've got a real fighting chance of that ninth place that we currently sit. We can hold it. I'm really confident.
He's got a real chance of going to this summer's World Cup. Oh, hang on, it's not in the summer, is it? But okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, we're brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And we have a beauty of a shirt for you this week. Check it out on all the social media channels and, of course, on oldfootballshirts.com. But who wants to have a go at describing this one for me? Andy, well, you're the Raw Virgin. You have a go.
I know who it is, so I'll let someone else have a go.
Well, it's green and then it's green again. sort of green stripes. A Puma shirt sponsored by a company called Aviva. I don't know if that might be Avis, maybe. It looks like the same sort of logo as Avis, like car hire people. It looks like, but maybe a different name in a different country. I don't know.
I think Avis is the brand.
Okay. So yeah, there's a sort of league shirt on the sleeve. I'm not too sure what that is, but I don't know. I think maybe a tie or an Indian team, I'm thinking. I'm not too sure if I zoom in on the badge, if I can see a different language, but yeah, no. So I'm going with a team somewhere in Asia with a link to Man United for some reason.
Okay, Justin, any ideas?
Yeah, there's a St. George's cross on it. And so for me, that indicates a potential link with St. George. And we know that St. George gets around. He's not just a patron saint of England. A lot of
people. What are you saying?
He's the patron saint of syphilis.
I mean, he's Turkish. He's been everywhere, bless him. But I know that Barcelona have a St. George's cross on their badge, but that doesn't look like Barcelona's. So I know that St. George's associated with Portugal quite a lot, so it could be a Portuguese club.
I love the way you're hedging your bets here.
I'm going to go for Real Zaragoza.
He's bloody close, isn't he?
No, he's go close. On, Al. Go on, yeah. Who do you think?
It's SD Eibar. I recognise the badge.
Yes, it is. And this is what Phil has to say about this particular shirt. This is the 2018-19 third shirt of a Spanish Segunda Division side, Sociedad Deportiva Eibar, more commonly known as Eibar. Their rather disturbing nickname is Los Armareros, after the former industry of the city of Eibar, the manufacturer of guns. In particular, around the time of the Spanish Civil War, Los Armareros translates to the gunsmiths. The team was formed in 1940, and their home is the Ipura Futbol Zelaria Stadium, which is an all-seater stadium with a capacity of 8,164. In an effort to cut costs by disbanding their youth and reserves teams, Eibar have a collaboration agreement with the lower league sides Vitoria and Longones to act as their feeder teams. In addition, they've integrated local teams Urkamende, now known as Eibar Urko, to act as a link between the youth and the senior players. They are not the most successful Spanish side by any means, but they did win the Segunda Division in 2014 and have won Segunda Division B and Tercera Divisions 10 times in total. Notable former players include Xabi Alonso, who spent a couple of months on loan from Real Sociedad in Eibar in 2000, playing 14 times. David Silva also spent time on loan at Eibar in 2004 to 2005, making 35 appearances for the Gunsmiths. And another loanee that links the side to the Albion, Mark Cucurella, made 31 appearances for... Actually, I don't believe this bit. He made 31 appearances on loan from Barcelona, scoring once. He scored a goal.
I reckon he just balanced it in his hair and then ran over the line.
Yeah, it's obviously just hit him somewhere, hasn't it? I mean, it and gone in.
I'll tell you what, if anyone can find it on YouTube, there'd be a collector's piece.
But thanks for that. Of course, you can see that and many others over at oldfootballshirts.com. And thanks to Phil for your continued support.
Talking of green shirts, AD, and I know we don't do the speculation stuff that much. Is anyone going to speculate what our away shirt's going to be next year? If not our away shirt, then at least our third shirt. Because I understand we're finally offloading the yellow shirt, but is the Hyperturk going to stick around for a bit?
It seems to be the pattern of the club. That becomes the third shirt, doesn't it? The away shirt. And yeah. What haven't we had in a while? We haven't had red and black in a while, have we?
No.
No. What's one that comes around?
I think we should go back to like having like three shirts with blue in it, like we did a few years ago.
Yeah, that's a really silly idea, isn't it? No, we haven't had green. Well, we had green, and we did have a third one, which I can't remember what they called it. I want to call it cerise, but it was kind of half. I always think of the Fulham away game, the one where we got battered and beat them 2-1.
Salmon. That was a salmon.
Was it? Oh, slightly overcooked salmon.
I'm going to go with wild Atlantic salmon, but
with a bit of deal on it.
They sometimes pick a shirt with a kind of link to some of our prominent players, like the green we had when Duffy was playing. Died, you know. So I'm wondering if we kind of, I don't know, is this something Argentinian? Is there something Spanish or something? I don't know.
Boca Juniors, was McAllister at Boca Juniors or was it Argentinos Junior?
He was at both, I think.
Both, yeah.
Okay, well, Boca Juniors is no good because that's blue with a yellow band. But we could really insult his intelligence by having River Plate, but that's white with a red stripe, and that's far too much like Crystal Palace.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's move on. We haven't quite finished with Wolves. But before we do, I mean, obviously it was a first goal of the season for Ibra Suma. Once something we've asked for a long time is more goals from midfield, but also we also saw an identikit goal from Leandro Trossard, who's most of his goals all seem to look pretty much the same. But that's him on seven goals for the season, and his form over the last few games has been brilliant.
Yeah, he's one we could lose in the summer as well, isn't he? His stock is high at the moment. He's it's last year of his contract coming up, isn't it? So we've talked about Bissouma a lot, but Trossard's in the same position.
I'm going to look at it as a kind of a Bissouma type scenario, because I go onto the Anfield Rap quite a bit, and the Liverpool fans are massive fans of, well, the ones we talk to are massive fans of Bissouma. I said, look, you know, he probably will do well at Liverpool, but not yet. And this was a conversation around this time last year, in as much as we need another year out of him, or rather he needs another year to actually sort of like, you know, properly mature. And the fact is, all right, he had a bit of a dip in form in the mid-season. There's, you know, and let's not go into the off-field stuff. But he is back to something close to his best. And I think that we can see that there are fewer midfielders in this division who are better than him. What we've also got, and it doesn't help us, is that we found this midfield trio of Caicedo, Bissouma and Nwepu. And it would be a tragedy to break them up. But my point would be is that I think it's the same issue with Trossard. I don't think he's ready to move on yet. I think at least another year. before, in which case, you know, yeah, I know it means possibly running down the clock to a, you know, an out of contract player, but I just don't think he's ready to make a step up to the next phase yet. He hasn't been consistent enough throughout the season for me. I don't know. I'll throw that open to you guys.
Justin?
I'm still bitter about Ashley Barnes and his January departure.
That was 8 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm still bitter. and the club came out and said, you know, it was going to be a free in the summer, or we got $500,000. So for me, if Bissouma and Trossard and Mopay and McAllister, if they haven't signed on the dotted line by 31st of August, we just get rid, because I think we've got enough decent prospects. And for every Trossard, there is a Reda Kadra, there is a Mitoma, there is a Sarmiento waiting to take his place. For Bissouma, well, we've got Casado, and he's already proving how brilliant he is. Alzate wants to get back in that midfield. Moda will be back soon. We still got Lallana. So they either commit or we make money on them.
Question for you, Justin. Is Casado ready to step into Basuma's boots?
Yes. I just think he's amazing.
Andy, you wanted to make a point?
I was just saying, if you had to lose one of them, Trossard or Bissouma, because the club has obviously, we lost Ben White last summer, and 50 million sounds about right, and looks like it suited everyone. And but we seem to have this, maybe we'll let one big player go to a decent club. So if you had to say which one?
Well, Graham said we don't. He's come out on, in the press this week, and he said we don't have to sell anyone. But it's but with a year left on the contracts, this is a conversation we're having last week, wasn't it, Al? But it's a very Russian roulette kind of thing, isn't it?
Go on, Andy.
I'm sorry. They don't have to sell, I think. But I think they mentioned this is almost part of their strategy of bringing in young players and developing them and picking them up on a cheap, or not on a cheap, but it's still 13 million quid or so for Bissouma, isn't cheap. But
yeah, quite.
Almost seems to be part of their development of players. The system is get good enough for those really big teams, get good enough here, and we'll let you go. So I can't see us not losing one of our decent players in the summer. I think that's our system.
Do you think any of them are want-aways?
I think if you offered any of them twice as much money as...
Well, yes. But what I mean is are any of them angling for it, or you know, is hype being believed here? I mean, obviously Bissouma's been courted, or certainly talked about, for a good 18 months now. Trossard less so.
Trossard came out in the press with a comment around, I'm going to be looking around. I'm not, you know, let's see what my options are, which for me is like, well,
honest.
Whilst I respect that, I'd respect even more kind of Bright. I need to develop more. I need more time with Bright. I don't know. He was very honest. But for me, if you're being that honest, then teams like Newcastle are going to pick up on that. And when you're talking about doubling the salaries, you could say quadrupling the salaries if Newcastle get a sniff of him or Bissouma.
Yeah, well, so I mean, the classic thing here is, of course, I mean, we're playing one of the biggest clubs in the world today. And or Saturday, depending on when you're listening to this, and you know, they are crying out for somebody like Ease Bissouma, but more importantly, they were crying out for someone like Dan Ashworth, and like they've missed the boat on Ashworth, but they need to have that complete reorganisation from top to bottom, and they need to get players they actually need to make them better, rather than just like throwing money at the next best person. And
we're,
you know,
back to Kieran Maguire's point that he's made this week about there's a difference between spending money and spending it well.
Yeah.
Now, how you can define it, I mean, you could say, well, millions of pounds per point or millions of pounds per goal or whatever it might be. That's one thing. But you've also got to see as to the nature of how it fits in. Now, obviously, Brighton is going to be a club of which we are going to be victims of predators because, like it or lump it, we are still, in terms of finances and resources, a bottom six club who have this season not overachieved, because there's some people who think, well, why couldn't we have done better? And some of our performances have warranted better results and a better place up the table. But that's the whole notion of spending money well, which other clubs, you know, don't necessarily consider. And obviously you wouldn't trade that off. You don't want to actually have our club then offer Trossard or Bissouma double salary just to keep them, on account of the fact that, you know, no one person is bigger than the club. We can't bust the club in order to keep someone unless you knew there was going to be a return on that. And We're not there yet. We're still a bare minimum of 5-6 years away from the notion of getting decent money in from European football.
Yeah, well, it's a well-known fact that you don't come to Brighton for the money, Al. But it's
of course.
But it's what you are involved in, and it's a very attractive option for younger players who could possibly be the next biggest player in the world. And I include Cachedo in that, because he's got the potential to go all the way. Andy,
yeah, I don't think the club want to open the door on those really big contracts. I think that's what they resist against. I think, you know, that they don't want to double Bissouma's wages, because what it's going to mean is, you know, we'll have to double Trossard's wages and other players' wages. And then that
Lewis Dunks.
Yeah, exactly. So if you open that door and offer one of those players to keep them an extortionate amount of money a week, I don't think it's in what they would call a business model. I think their business model is to pay a lower wages in comparison to some of the bigger clubs, but to develop talent and make the money that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it does actually sort of make it sound as though that we are effectively a conveyor belt of talent. And I really hate it when, and I think that the whole transfer rumor of so-and-so is interested in so-and-so and they're valued at so-and-so, and it makes a player sound like a commodity. And you think, actually, they're a human being that actually just wants to do their best for the 10, 12, 15 years that they've got as their career, where the rest of us are playing or looking at football like Monopoly rather than like the sport it's supposed to be. And that's where I sort of, you know, that's sort of the disdain that I think I feel when it comes to the notion of the Premier League. It's not the Premier League per se. It's all the people around it who actually then, I think, misconstrue what a lot of it could or should be about. Don't get me wrong. There are some sort of silly people within football who do talk about money in that way. But for us, we still like watching the Albion in the Premier League. Yeah, we go and see Worthing. Yeah, we go and see our local team or whoever it might be. You go and see Sudbury or whatever it might be. But we still want to watch the Albion because we want to watch football, not because they're rich or not because they're X, Y, Z. You know, you want success by all means. And we're on the cusp of, you know, our most successful season ever. And I would like to have thought that would actually be reason enough for some players to look at it and think, well, if we can do that this season on the back of what we've had, what can we do next season? And, you know, but that's, I'm a fan, not a player. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, a couple of things. I mean, firstly, we've broken this record points barrier, which in the Premier League, not the top flight, but we can still possibly, can we beat the, well, 52
we can beat
points.
The old total in its outright thing. Yeah. But I think someone did calculate that if we get 48 points, then it's a record pro rata.
Yeah, well, that's something. And also, we've broken the 9-win barrier, which seemed to be a noose around our necks for the last few years as well. But that's something else you said.
I think that's just a statistical anomaly more than anything. It's not as though I think, okay, 9, we can't do anymore. Because actually, we've actually finished most of the season, the other 4 seasons that we've had in this division, we've actually finished it pretty well.
But so still never got, well, this is the first time in the 5 years we've been there that we've got past 9 wins for the season though. So that is a thing that is, you know, all we're going to do now is win more games at home. Yay, Andy. Yeah.
So I think some stuff on Twitter about can we catch West Ham, which is just madness. But if but chasing down that last Conference League spot, I think people were kind of hyping that. Obviously, we're not going to do it, but it's been such a strange season to be thinking, looking over our shoulder at relegation, then at the end of the season thinking, well, there's an outside chance we could finish.
Can we get seventh?
Yeah, I think, yeah, we can, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We have to, I think West Ham have to lose to Norwich the day after. So
That could happen. Okay, well, let's just move on, because we are running out of time here. And Al, you mentioned going to watch Worthing. We are going to do that on Tuesday night, but we're going to go and do that at the Amex, where they will be taking on Brighton.
I think that's going to be quite a good game. The Sussex Senior Cup final, you were discussing it, saying, oh, what's the point? I said, hang on, I did point out to you that it's Worthing, the one team that won it more than Brighton have.
I didn't say what's the point. I was basically going, I don't know who I'm going to support, is what I was going to say in that one.
So I think in this instance, I support the underdog, which is Brighton under 23. No, it's going to be a cracking game. I genuinely think it's going to be a cracking game. And I think given, if Worthing's attendances are anything to go by, which admittedly sometimes have been boosted a little bit by Brighton fans who haven't gone to an away game, but if their attendances are anything to go by, it should be a reasonable crowd.
Yeah. And Dean Cox gets to play at the Amex.
Finally. Justin, Andy, does this hold much store for you, or is it? I suppose, Andy, you're in Suffolk, so it's a little bit was a bit of a trait for you.
But yeah, Justin, the Suffolk Senior Cup final is probably something completely different.
Yeah, Justin, I mean, this is only around the corner from you. Does it hold anything for you, or is it just whatever?
If I have more time, it might do, but at the moment, it is a bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Whatever.
And just to remind you that the very first Renf game outside Sussex took place last week. It finished in a 1-1 draw, which means it's all to play for when they go back to Lancing. Sadly, not the Albion's training ground. They're going to Culver Road, Sussex FA headquarters, on Friday the 27th of May for the second leg. Please do come along. It'd be great to have a bumper crowd. It should be warm. The sun might still be shining because it's late May.
What? Culver Road, warm. I mean, it might be the hottest day in the world. You need to wear a duffel coat.
Come along, bring six blankets. but do please come along. It's a fiver to get in. All money goes towards the Robert Ian Memorial Fund. And let's face it, we want, whether it comes to, like I say, football, cricket, kaplunks, tiddlywink, or operation, I don't care. We've got to beat Crystal Palace. So do come along and support the lads.
Okay. And that's all we've got time for this week. So thank you so much to Andy Message. Thank you to Justin Brentnell. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye. Loving you.